The center drawer at the top held nothing but two American passports, one for Kate and one for Jade.
"Who is Jade's father?"
Reacher asked. "Does it matter?"
"It might.
If this was a straightforward abduction, we'd definitely have to look at him. Estranged parents are who usually snatch kids. But this is a kidnap for ransom. And it's Kate they're talking about. Jade was just there by chance. Abductions can be disguised. And her father would need to clothe and feed her and send her to school. He might want money."
"He's dead," Lane said.
"He died of stomach cancer when Jade was 3.
"Who was he?"
"He owned a jewelry store. Kate ran it for a year afterward. Not very well. She had been a model. But that's where I met her, in the store. I was buying a watch."
"Any other relatives? Possessive grandparents? Aunts? Uncles?"
"Nobody that I ever met. Therefore, nobody that saw Jade in the last several years. Therefore, nobody you could really describe as possessive."
Reacher closed the center drawer, straightened the photograph, and turned around.
"Closet?"
Lane pointed at one of a pair of narrow white doors. Behind it was a closet, large for a New York City apartment, small for any place else. It had a pull chain for a light. Inside were racks of women's clothes and shoes, fragrance in the air. There was a jacket neatly folded on the floor, ready for the dry cleaner, Reacher thought. He picked it up. There was a Bloomingdale's label in it. He checked the pockets. Nothing in them.
"What was she wearing when she went out?"
"I'm not sure."
"Who would know?"
"We all left before her," Lane said. "I don't think anyone was still here. Except Taylor."
Reacher closed the closet door and stepped away to the armoire. It had double doors at the top and drawers below. One of the drawers held jewelry. One was full of miscellaneous junk, like paper packets of spare buttons from new garments and discarded pocket change. One was full of lacy underwear, bras, pants, all of them either white or black.
"May I see Jade's room?" Reacher asked.
Lane led him through a short interior hallway. Jade's room was all pale pastels and kid stuff. Furry bears, china dolls, toys, games, a low bed, pajamas folded on the pillow, a nightlight still burning, a low desk covered in drawings done with wax crayons on butcher paper, a small chair neatly tucked in. Nothing that meant anything to a military cop.
"I'm done," Reacher said. "I'm very sorry to intrude."
He followed Lane back to the living room. The leather bag was still there on the floor near the foyer. Gregory and the 5 other soldiers were still in their places, still quiet and pensive.
"Decision time," Lane said.
"Do we assume Reacher was observed entering the building tonight or not?"
"I didn't see anyone," Gregory said. "And I think it's very unlikely. Round-the-clock surveillance would eat manpower, so I would say not."
"I agree," Lane said. "I think Reacher is still Joe Public to them, so he should be on the street at 7 o'clock. We should try a little surveillance of our own."
There was no objection. Reacher nodded.
"I'll watch the front of the Spring Street building. That way I'll see one of them at least, maybe 2 of them."
"Don't show yourself," Lane said. "You understand my concern, right?"
"Completely."
"They won't make me."
"Surveillance only. Absolutely no intervention."
"Don't worry."
"They'll be there early, so you'll be in position earlier."
"Don't worry," Reacher said again.
"I'll leave right now."
"Don't you want to know which building you're supposed to be watching?"
"I don't need to know.
I'll see Gregory leave the keys."
Then he let himself out of the apartment and rode down in the elevator, nodded to the doorman and walked out to the street, headed for the subway at 72nd and Broadway. The woman who was watching the building saw him go. She had seen him arrive with Gregory, and now he was leaving alone. She checked her watch and made a note of the time. She craned her head and tracked his progress west. Then she lost sight of him and moved back deep in the shadows.
Chapter 7.
First in was a 9 train. Reacher used the Metro card he had bought the day before and rode 10 stops south to Houston Street.
Then he came up from under the ground and walked south on Varric. It was just past 3 o'clock in the morning and very quiet. In Reacher's experience, a city that doesn't sleep sometimes did, at least for an hour or two, on some nights of the week. There was sometimes a short intermission after the late folk had rolled home and before the early people had gotten up. Then the city went silent and took a breath, and shiny darkness owned the streets. That was Reacher's time. He liked to picture the sleeping people stacked 12, 30, 50 stories high, often head to head with perfect strangers on opposite sides of thin apartment walls, deep in slumber, unaware of the tall, quiet man striding beneath them in the shadows. He made a left on Charlton Street and crossed 6th Avenue, and Charlton became Prince. 3 blocks later, he was on West Broadway in the heart of Soho, a block north of Spring Street, 3 hours and 40 minutes ahead of schedule. He walked south with the leisurely gait of a man with a place to go but in no hurry to get there. West Broadway was wider than the cross streets, so as he ambled past Spring, he had a good view of the southwest corner. There was a narrow, iron-fronted building with a dull red door set high, 3 steps up to it. The building's facade was covered with graffiti low down and laced with a complex fire escape high up. The upper-story windows were filthy and backed with some kind of a dark fabric. On the ground floor, there was a single window pasted over with faded building permits. There was a mail slot in the door, a narrow rectangle with a flap. Maybe once it had been shiny brass, but now it was dull with tarnish and pitted by corrosion. That's the one, Reacher thought. Got to be. He turned east a block later on Broome and then backtracked north on Green Street past shuttered boutiques that sold sweaters that cost more than first-class airplane tickets and household furniture that cost more than domestic automobiles. He turned west on Prince and completed his circuit around the block, walked south on West Broadway again, and found a doorway on the east sidewalk. It had a stoop 1.5 feet high. He kicked garbage out of his way and lay down on his back, his head cradled on his folded arms, his head canted sideways like a somnolent drunk, but with his eyes half open and focused on the dull red door 70 feet away. Kate Lane had been told not to move and to make absolutely no noise at all, but she decided to take a risk. She couldn't sleep, obviously. Neither could Jade. How could anyone sleep under circumstances like theirs? So Kate crept out of her bed and grasped the rail at the end and inched the whole bed sideways.
"Mom, don't," Jade whispered. "You're making a noise."